Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Scott Benjamin, and that's Ben Bolin, and this is High-Speed Stuff.
High-Speed Stuff.
Oh, you're going to chime in, were you?
I didn't know where we were going with
pause,
it.
Yeah. I surprised you with it.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. And we might have a surprise for a couple of people who thought they would never hear from us.
Oh, Ben, more than a couple.
More than a couple.
Yeah, more than a couple. And, you know, actually, I've written back to a couple of these already because these requests come from some of them a long time ago, others recent. But we finally have gotten around to our kind of our engine series, I guess, where we're talking about different types of engines. Remember we talked – what was the last time we talked about?
Hit and miss engine earlier.
Hit and miss engines. That's right. Now, today we're going to cover rotary engines. And we do have a few people that have mentioned it, so I'll just quickly go through the emails and get the names out there, let you know who it was. Eduardo wanted to hear about the Wankel rotary engine and why Mazda's he says, why is Mazda only company to mass produce it? That's true, but only recently. We'll talk about that. There's also one from earlier this year, and it was Ted. Ted's from St. Louis. We've talked about talked to Ted before and answered his mail on air and via email. Ted Ted wants to know about doing a show about rotary engines and other engine designs that never really made it into production. But he did mention that the Wankel engine might be something he'd like to hear about too.
Okay.
But you know, rotary engines, of course, did make it into production. He knows that, but not that specific type.
Right.
Let's see. Next one is from Dennis, and Dennis is also from St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
And Dennis also wanted to know about, rotary engines in general, because he and his wife, I guess, bought one a couple of years ago. This is via the email. A couple of years ago, he and his wife bought one, had a little bit of trouble with it in the cold weather. And he was wondering why they had trouble with it in the cold weather. And I don't know if I have the answer for that today, but we're going to talk about rotary engines today. But eventually they had to get rid of the vehicle because, you know, they were paying towing costs and things like that. So apparently there was some kind of issue with their rotary engine in cold weather. And I, we'll have to look into that maybe.
Yes, we'll have to investigate.
Exactly. Let's see. Then there's John, and John is from New Brunswick, Canada. And he says, likes the podcast. Just going through his email quick here, Ben.
Yeah.
he started listening to Stuff You Should Know. Then this was kind of an evolution that he ended up listening to us. Likes to know what's going on in cars, but he said that he also would like to know about, rotary engines. Nothing in particular, just saying that he just has kind of an interest in what's going on inside there, what makes them so different from other engines. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. So this email fits in perfectly with it. He has a couple of things that he says, you know, like that they he mentions that they tend to guzzle oil. And I've never heard they guzzle oil, but I have heard that they're a little bit more on the fuel consumption side.
Right, a little less efficient.
Yeah, a little less efficient. But other good points there. Mm-hmm. So that was John from New Brunswick. And there's one last one here from I'm going to say it's Maurizio. Maurizio is the name. And I've actually written back to Maurizio. And Maurizio is from Malta, which is in Europe, and said that he's not technically minded, but says that he does like our podcast because they combine entertainment and education.
Oh, thanks, man.
Very good. And
we're very rarely accused of being entertaining.
That's right. Or educational.
Well,
no, yeah.
Okay. So what's he saying?
He says that he'd like to know about the different types of engine, the pros and cons of each, how they came about, so on. For instance, what's with boxer engines, V engines, inline engines, as well as rotary engines. So that is the list of, I think it was five people there.
Yeah, there we go. We've got Eduardo, Ted, Dennis, John, and Maurizio.
Mm-hmm.
And it may have taken us a second, but maybe we should have a drum roll in here for a second. This is part two of our super series on engines.
Rotary engines.
Rotary engines.
That's right. That's it. And so where do you want to get started on this? Because they are truly different than a standard, I guess, what we'd consider a typical engine, which is an internal combustion piston engine. Where do you want to go with this thing? Because it's one of those you got to kind of describe it piece by piece. And
right.
Hopefully they can get somewhere where they can, you know, look online and see what we're talking about. Because, that's where the real, that's where it all comes together, I guess.
fortunately, we're rather articulate. So I think we can, at least help people get a leg up in describing this. First question would be, the most immediate question would be, why is it called a rotary engine?
Good question. Because it has, instead of having pistons, like we just mentioned, it has rotors. And, just for instance, the RX-8, which is the current Mazda version that has a rotary engine, this vehicle has, it's a two-rotor design, so it has just two rotors instead of what would be six pistons or four pistons or eight pistons.
Right. Okay.
Just two rotors, and we're going to describe all the shapes of this and what's happening inside and all that as we go along here. But basically, you're saying why would they use a rotary engine?
Right.
The benefits, there's several benefits to a rotary engine, and the benefits to a rotary engine are that it's lighter, first of all, because it's a much smaller design. It's more compact. It's a lot less complex than a piston engine. Mm-hmm. The piston engines have, just for example, a typical or a comparable piston engine would have about 40 moving parts for an internal combustion engine with pistons. Mm-hmm. A rotary engine has about three moving parts if you're talking about a two-rotor engine.
I like that kind of thing.
I know it. There's a lot less to go wrong there. Now, it just means that it's often more reliable because of that design. Now, there's other benefits that we'll hear along the way here, but those are the big ones. It's lighter, just more compact. So, you know, it's obviously for a sports car, that's important because we've talked about weight. We've talked about, horsepower to weight ratio, and the placement of the engine itself helps it achieve a very neutral handling capability. So they can place it. In fact, in the RX-8, it's placed. It's in the front of the car still, but it's behind the front axle, completely behind the front axle, and it gives it this really outstanding handling. I've never driven an RX-8, but from what I hear, they handle really well, and that's because of the weight, the balance of the car,
the distribution of the weight,
exactly front and rear distribution.
Okay.
A couple of downsides.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about those right now, we'll just get this out of the way, and then we'll get into the actual. How these things work. There are often a higher cost to build these engines, and that's because they're not mass produced like a lot of the other engines are. You can't buy, you know, as many you just don't build as many of these as you normally do because it's Mazda just building them in the RX-8, and they're saying, well, we need to build 10,000 a year, whatever the order is. That's not like, you know, the other companies that are buying enough parts for say 200,000 or 300,000 of a certain type of vehicle every year.
Right.
Certain pistons, certain blocks, certain, you know, camshafts, whatever it is. It's just a smaller production run, that's all.
See, that's one of the questions that I also wanted to ask. Why has Mazda decided to put in a rotary engine?
Well, they've had fantastic luck with it, and that's to their credit, because other companies have tried using this design, this rotary design. And I guess we can go back kind of to the early, the beginning of this, and we'll work our way up to Mazda and figure out why. Reasons that I just mentioned, because it's a sports car. It's handy to have this type of engine designed for a sports car if you can make it work. Other companies have tried it and haven't really worked out too well. Now, they do come in other flavors, I guess, if you want to say that.
Okay.
You know, I remember these engines being in snowmobiles, things like that. Motorcycles even had rotary engines for a while. Airplanes have rotary engines. Mm. Some still do. They use they choose to use that because of the reliability, I think, and the less moving parts.
Yeah, that's a big one to me too.
Yeah, exactly. So, So this is a we can go back to the beginning and just kind of work our way towards the present. And
let's cue up in your mind that Wayne's World travel back in time music.
Exactly. You know? So just to clarify here, we're talking about the pistonless rotary engine.
Yes.
There's another type of rotary engine that is from a long, long time ago. I don't even know if they still make these or not, Ben. I've got to be honest with you. I've seen them. I can picture these in every airplane photo I've seen from, you know, the early 1900s, though. It's the type where you see all the cylinders radiating out from the center.
Oh, yes,
Right behind the prop of the plane, right?
Right.
That is a type of rotary engine, or it could be a radial engine. Depends on the design of the engine. Now, a rotary engine is where – think about this. This is where the crankshaft stays in one place. The engine block spins around the crankcase, or crankshaft, rather.
Which doesn't seem that efficient to me.
It doesn't, but it's just all, like, once it gets moving, it's efficient. It really is. It was designed for early airplanes. So, again, the block rotated around the stationary crankshaft, if you can imagine that.
I can, but still, seems...
Exactly, yeah. And the other type that looks that, I mean, just to the layman, I guess, it looks the same as the rotary engine. I know that people are going to say it's totally different, but it looks similar enough that you would be confused maybe if you didn't know the exact differences, is a radial engine. And the radial engine used pistons that, you know, it was like, more like a standard engine design in a way, yeah. But it still had the radiating design. But there was a crankshaft that was in motion inside there, and the block stayed still.
Okay.
And the pistons then worked in a normal fashion, I guess you'd say.
Just radiating around the crankshaft.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So, again, to clear that up, we're talking about the pistonless rotary engine when we talk about what, you know, the progression that we're going through. It kind of all started, we have to mention Felix Wankel, who is Dr. Felix Wankel. He's kind of he's the developer. He's the one who conceived of this idea in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And he was a German mechanical engineer. He was born in 1902, so this goes way back. Now, he didn't build the engine in 1902. He was starting to work on prototypes around the late 50s.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he was well into his career at that point.
Which 50s?
1950s.
Okay.
1950s.
Just
he was born in 1902, so the 1950s.
Yeah.
I believe the first presentation of the working rotary engine that, you know, everybody saw in a vehicle for the first time.
It was like exhibition?
Exactly. It was in the 1960s, early 1960s, maybe even 1960.
Okay.
I've seen it credited for 60, 61, 62. Mm-hmm. I think it just depends on where you look in the source.
So this is, as opposed to the hit-miss engine, this is a relatively recent.
Relatively, yes. Yeah, exactly. Because remember that hit and miss, that goes way back.
Right,
steam days. This is, as far as I know, there's no steam power.
This goes back to the to the flower children.
Yeah, there's no steam power rotary engine as far as I know. That'd be kind of cool to see.
There's none yet.
Not yet. Now that I've mentioned it, sure, someone's going to do it. And it uses the typical auto cycle, mm-hmm. Which is the four stroke cycle, intake, combustion,
compression.
I'm sorry.
Intake, compression, combustion.
I can't believe I screwed that up. Intake. What'd you say?
Isn't it intake, compression, combustion, and then the fourth exhaust?
Perfect. Good work, Ben.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I wrote that down.
Studying
earlier.
Up. Is it on your hand?
It is not anymore. It's not on my hand anymore.
Committed to memory, though, right?
No, it is on my hand.
Oh, come on. I was trying to give you some credit. That's good. Very, very good.
But how does it – this is the question people would ask then, and I think this will lead in nicely to what you're about to say. Mm-hmm. The next question is, how does this engine go through those stages without a piston?
Ah, here we go. This is where it all gets – this is where it all comes together. And honestly, I'm going to say that it would help you if you're able to get to a computer, look at this design online, or follow along. There's plenty of animations of this happening. So you could see it. There's one on our site, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah. Pretty good one.
Yeah, we do have a How Rotary Engines Work article that was written by Marshall Brain a long time ago. I'm sorry, Kareem Nice wrote it. But it's been there for a couple of years, and it's still valid. It's still still accurate, but I'll try to go through the steps here as we talk. Basically, here's the way it is. It's a real simple design, truthfully. There are several plates that come together in the rotary engine design. And if you imagine, there's a center plate, which is, I guess it's a housing, really. It's a center plate that has the air intake.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the rotor housing, which is where the rotor ends up spinning. It's a little thicker than one of the end plates. There's a center, a rotor housing, and then a cap on the end. And if you go the other direction, there's another rotor piece and another cap on the end. So you've got this kind of sandwich layer that comes together.
Okay.
And in there, you've got the rotors. And the rotors are triangular-shaped, well, for lack of a better word, pistons.
Mm-hmm.
Not really a piston like you would think of, but, I mean, again, you have to look at these to understand exactly what I'm talking about. But they're a three-sided piston that, or something that acts like a piston, I should say, because what it does is it spins on these, on the crankshaft has eccentric lobes. They're not shaped, perfectly circular, of course.
Yeah.
They have these odd shapes on them, and that's what drives the rotor around within this chamber. around the rotor housing. And the rotor housings have an unusual shape as well. You'd have to see that to understand again.
Sure.
Kind of pinches in the middle, kind of like almost like a peanut would be shaped, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like big at the top, small in the middle, and bigger at the bottom. And all four cycles are accomplished within that small area with the air intake, the compression, the combustion with two spark plugs, because it has a longer combustion chamber than a normal or standard internal combustion engine would have, and then the exhaust port, which is really just a hole or an opening on the side. So it's really, really simple when you watch this thing happening and what's going on. But in addition to having fewer moving parts, the rotary engine also spins slower than a standard ICE engine because for every how does it work here? It's a 3-to-1 ratio. So for every time the crankshaft spins, or the crankshaft spins 3 times for every 1 revolution of the piston.
Oh, okay.
So you're getting a lot of output for the input that's being handled by the 1 revolution of the rotor.
That's a heck of a ratio too.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty good. So they've got it runs a lot slower. 2 are all that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting so every time around, I guess, if you've got a 2 rotor assembly, I think you're getting the same as 6 cycles. Is that right? I think that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. It's 3-to-1.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting design, and I'm probably not doing much justice for the operation here at all, but it's really, really kind of cool to watch this thing happen and watch it a few times. Really pay attention to when the intake's happening, the position that the rotor is in, how it seals, because on the ends of each of those edges of the triangle, there's a blade, a metal blade, and that keeps the seal, so that the chambers are sealed off from each other. But watch how those chambers expand and contract for each different cycle, and you'll really learn how this whole thing comes together, how it works.
Scott, I got to ask you, on behalf of Eduardo, John, Dennis, Ted, Maurizio, let's say they want to see one of these engines working, operating in real life, outside of the internet, which is, not my specialty, but they don't want to see the Mazda. Where's another sort of vehicle that they could see a rotary engine?
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. Some of those planes, I guess.
Yeah, some of the planes, but that's the old style.
Yeah.
That's the old style. If you want, I guess, I'm sure a lot of race cars have rotary engines because of the size and weight. They use the Mazda engine. But really, Mazda is the one who's doing the mass production of these engines at this point. I don't know if the snowmobile manufacturers are still using the rotary engines for this. I'm not familiar enough with snowmobile, the guts of snowmobiles to know if they're still doing that or not. But I know that a long time ago. Now this is getting off the subject already. But
let's go off the subject.
All right, just a little bit. But I remember that a long time ago, when I was in shop class, in high school. Aside from picking up fashion tips from my shop teacher,
nice one.
Yes, yeah. I remember someone talking about using a snowmobile engine, like these Wankel design engines, a rotary engine for a go kart, and how unbelievably fast you could make a go kart with a snowmobile engine. Because you're talking like something that's meant for a much larger machine that weighs a lot more.
Sure.
And you may have 50 or 55 horsepower. That fits in the space, single rotor design that fits in the space of what normally would be a 5 or 7 horsepower engine that you could put on a go-kart. And I'm sure there's a lot of modification that was necessary for this to happen, but I was always kind of halfway looking around for something like that, to just appear, that I'd be able to mess around with. But I never found one.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet, and I still have that go-kart. So
you still have that go-kart.
I do. I guess there's always that chance, but you know what? It would make it insanely fast and dangerous. You'd have to worry about brakes, and you'd have to worry about, because it would just overpower everything.
Just only drive on straightaways. Only drive it on the straightaway.
Excellent solution.
In a residential neighborhood without speed bumps.
One other quick thing that I want to mention here.
Yeah.
The 2010 RX-8, which is, it's got something called a Rensis engine. It's just a, and I don't know if I know even what that stands for, the Rensis. I think it's like the next generation. I looked it up somewhere.
Rotary engine.
Exactly.
I've got it.
You know what? I've got it in my notes here somewhere.
Okay.
I will try to find it by the time we finish this podcast.
All right.
But I don't think so. I got a pile of notes. So, anyways, it's a 2 rotor rotary engine that It was able to get the Engine of the Year for the international competition, International Engine of the Year in 2003. So that gives you an idea that this is a pretty strong engine.
Yeah.
Right around 230 horsepower, 240, something like that. I'm guessing. I forget what it was exactly. 230
Not
something.
Not bad at all, though.
Pretty good. And the other thing about the RX-8 is that you can, if you pay a careful attention to this, I've been watching this for a couple of years. If you look at the very lower front edge of an RX-8, right in this front center, right down near where you know would bump the curb, you can see the shape of the rotor at the very bottom of it. They've got a lot of these design accents that show you the shape of the rotor. You know, it signifies that this is a rotary powered car.
Huh.
There's one at the front; it's chrome, and at the bottom, there's one at the back that's chrome, and at the bottom in the center, and I believe there's some on the engine. You know, like just of course covering the engine cover, and I know that the headrest for the seats have the same cutout shape as the rotor. So see this triangular design, and that's to signify that this is a rotary powered engine, a rotary powered vehicle. And of course, you can buy a bunch of accessories that have things like that too, like the wheels can have that shape in them as well.
Would you drive a Mazda like this?
Yeah, sure. Of course I would. Yeah, it's supposed to be. Now I know they say that the rotary design's a little less fuel efficient.
Right.
And I hadn't heard this bit about maybe it being unreliable in cold weather. I don't know about that. I can't.
We might have
confirm.
To look into that. That'll go hand in hand with snowmobiles.
Yeah, exactly. I can't confirm or deny that. Yeah. But yeah, good point. You know, snowmobiles are meant to be out in the the snow and cold. I don't know. We'll have to figure that.
We
one
can
out,
check
but,
into this.
But I think I would. I mean, I think they're supposed to be real smooth. Operating, mm-hmm. real quiet, very powerful for the size. Well, what about you? Would you?
I think I would like it, but if I'm going to get a non-conventional engine, you know, wishes or horses, mm-hmm. I'd like to try a turbine car.
Would you?
Yeah, it just seems like a really strange and innovative idea.
A turbine car?
A turbine-powered car? Yeah, remember we did an earlier podcast on that.
Yeah.
You know, a rotary engine would be pretty cool for me living since we live in an urban area. So our fuel efficiency, you know, I just don't drive as much mm-hmm. as I would like to.
Yep.
And I might not be able to drive as much as I would like to if I had a rotary engine.
So you're putting less miles in the car and you feel that this wouldn't be, it'd be negligible at that point, right?
Yeah. And you know, between the two of us, you're a bit more of the speed demon. So the performance we could get out of that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'll hitch a ride with you.
Fair enough.
How about some listener mail?
Sounds good.
All right. So Scott, Ben from New York writes in and he says, hey, Scott and Ben. And I'm not going to do a voice. I'm not going to do a New York voice.
You're not going to.
I don't want to offend him.
come on.
even Matt is giving us a hard time. All right. Well, Ben from New York, we're going to read your letter real quick. Hey, Scott and Ben, just finished listening to the How Armored Cars Work podcast. When Ben bought up armored vehicles for scientific purposes, I thought of submarines. Pretty good call,
huh? Very good, yeah.
The intense pressure of the sea at many leagues deep requires submarines, both military and otherwise, to be heavily armored and fortified. Now, Ben goes on to say he's not exactly a submarine expert, but he imagines a submarine will be able to take quite a beating.
Hmm. All right, so fish with guns.
Fish
be able
with
to
guns.
Protect
yeah.
yourself against that.
against
of course, the
yeah.
depth.
The depth, yeah.
The depth, yeah. So that's it. The idea is that the construction, heavy construction like mm-hmm. that is similar to something that we use to carry money. Is that
yeah,
right? I mean, that's
yeah,
what I'm getting,
basically,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's neat because we haven't gone out into the water too much, I guess, conceptually so far. But it was cool to have somebody write in and tell us another armored vehicle.
It's pretty smart. I hadn't thought of submarines.
How did we miss submarines, man?
I mean, you know why? Because we were thinking of protection from thieves,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
you know, theft.
Yeah.
From you know someone doing something like blowing up the road beneath you, and,
sure.
You know shooting and you know that type of thing. We weren't thinking just atmospheric conditions. You know that you know the pressure all around you is enough to crush the vehicle that you're in.
Yeah, the angry, unending rage of water pressure.
That's right.
Right. So thanks, Ben from New York, for writing in to let us know that. We love listener mail because it lets us see some things that we might have missed, learn some things we might not have learned otherwise. And we're going to head out. We have got to get, let's see, what do we have to do, Scott?
Oh, we got a bunch of stuff to do. We have to, I don't know,
We have to do a bunch of stuff. Oh, we have to take a look at our Facebook and our Twitter page.
Oh, yeah. We've got a Facebook and Twitter page.
Mm-hmm. High Speed Stuff.
High Speed Stuff. That's right. And we've also got a Twitter account now, so you can follow us on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's always the blog. Mm-hmm. You can find the blog on the homepage if you're looking for that. And besides that, we've got a ton of great and interesting auto articles that you can just take a look at anytime you want.
All of these things are both free and interesting. And if you think they're not, please spare Scott right into me, and we'll work it out. But hopefully you find those fascinating, so fascinating, in fact, that you've looked through all of it and there's something that you still don't have an answer for. And in that case, please write to us with your questions and send that email to
highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. Be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the How Stuff Works homepage.